Hello and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and my co-host Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, thanks very much indeed for joining me.
Hey, great to be here, Tim.
Phil, plenty to get through in this episode. Lots and lots has happened since we last spoke. We've had a World Championships in Zurich. We've had a National Road Series come to its conclusion in the favour of Das Hutchinson Brother UK. The Ras and Oman, Ireland's leading stage race for women, dominated by Das Hutchinson Brother UK. We've had a brilliant, exceptional, I would say, edition of the Tour of Britain Men. We'll be hearing from Team GB's Louis Sutton. And on a more sort of serious note, we've had an update from British Cycling on their implementation of the recommendations from the Elite Road Racing Task Force. But before we get into any of that, Phil, yesterday was the Monsal Hill Climb, won on the men's side by Andy Nichols and on the women's by Rachel Galla. Now, last week, I put up a post on our social channels, a throwback Thursday, with a picture of Rebecca Richardson winning the Monsal Hill Climb in 2019. And the shocking news that I can reveal to us all now is that Rebecca is preparing a return to the hill climb scene next year. Could we see another Monsal Hill Climb victory for Rebecca Richardson?
Well, I'd be absolutely delighted for her if that was to happen. I mean, obviously, we sponsored Rebecca as a hill climber for some seasons, and she's a very determined individual. You know, once she sets goals, she's really, you know, really goes for it. I know she's had some health problems, which, you know, have basically kind of meant she's sort of not been around quite as much as we used to see her. But yeah, a formidable competitor. And I think if she gets the bit between her teeth vis-a-vis a comeback, that'd be an amazing thing for her.
Yeah, she certainly won't be coming back to ease herself in gently. We know that much about Rebecca. If she's coming back, it'll be to win. Well, look, having dealt with a major event in world cycling, let's move on to smaller matters such as the UCI Cycling World Championships and 8 days of competition for rainbow jerseys in Zurich. Very sadly, the later events were largely overshadowed by the tragic death of Switzerland's Muriel Furrer in the junior women's road race. We won't comment or speculate on that. There is a police investigation ongoing, only to share our sincere condolences with anyone who knew Muriel Furrer, notably her family and friends. More positively, it was a very successful championships for Great Britain, 22 medals in total across the able-bodied and para disciplines, including a double gold medal for Kat Ferguson, who's arrived hot from the domestic scene. She opened her season by winning the East Cleveland Classic in the National Road Series and has ended it with 2 gold medals at a World Championships. Not bad going. The championships climaxed with the Elite Women's Road Race last Saturday and the Elite Men's Road Race last Sunday. The women's race was won by Lotte Kopecky of Belgium, a second title added to the one that she won last year in Glasgow. Second was Chloe Dygert and third, Elisa Longo Borghini. The men's race was won by a certain Tadej Pogačar of Slovenia, second Ben O'Connor of Australia, and third Mathieu van der Poel, the defending champion of the Netherlands. Simple question, Phil. Is Tadej Pogačar the best rider of all time? He's the first to win this triple crown, the Giro, the Tour, and the Worlds in the same season since Stephen Roach in 1987, and before Roach, it was Eddie Merckx in 1974. People are openly saying now Pogačar is better than Merckx. How do you read that?
Well, I absolutely think he, you know, is in that same quadrant of rider. Yeah, I don't think you can ever compare them side by side because they have different, you know, technology, access to different equipment, different training techniques, all of these things. So you could argue, you know, could Tadej have been as good back in the day, racing against Merckx, for example. However, when you consider where he is right now and what his capability is, you have to say, I would definitely say he's absolutely the best rider of his generation, without a doubt. And you only have to listen to some of the riders when you saw the interviews post-race. And I remember Remco saying, you know, it was a suicide move and nobody thought he would, you know, be able to sustain it. And actually, even Pogačar himself said, you know, it was a stupid move. You know, it was stupid, but I did it. No other rider really would probably be as daring as Tadej Pogačar is, which is why I think he's so popular. Now, this is that one of those races, isn't it, where the normal dynamics of how teams race just totally change. No race radios. There's no sort of team orders in terms of how the riders are going to race itself. They have to work it out on the road. And so that really lends itself well, I think, to a sort of a daring rider like Pogačar, who rides on his instincts, who takes big gambles. And those big gambles either pay off or they don't. And here we are. He's now done that triple crown. And I think if I recall, he actually met Stephen Roach before the race, which I thought was lovely. So for that to happen and him to secure that victory, I think it's truly tremendous and absolutely, I think, the greatest rider of the current generation.
Yeah, absolutely no argument on that. Where he stands among the best of all time is a debate that we could have for hours and hours, but there is no question that he's the best of the current set. I mean, they talk about the curse of the rainbow jersey. He won 2 days ago in his first time out in the rainbow bands at the Giro dell'Emilia, where he attacked from a mere 38 kilometres from the finish. We are dealing with a very, very special talent.
And I'd also say probably Ernesto Colnago is going to start running out of bikes to make for this guy in the future, isn't he? Because almost every big race that he wins, you know, Colnago rock up with a, you know, another beautiful bike celebrating the victory. So I think we're probably going to see the Triple Crown edition Colnago coming out in the very near future.
Well, one rider, Phil, who can take us right inside the race is Das Hutchinson Brother UK's Caoimhe O'Brien. Caoimhe is the Irish under 23 road race champion. She's enjoyed a brilliant season. She's made her UCI Women's World Tour debuts at Ride London and the Tour of Britain Women. She won a stage of the Raz. She's won Belgian Kermesses. And she got the call up from Cycling Ireland for the World Championships in Zurich less than 4 weeks before the race. She rode in the elite women's race against Capecchi, Vollering, Voss, you name it. And this is the last World Championships in which the under 23 women will race against the elites. She told me it was the biggest event of her career so far. Let's have a listen to Caoimhe.
Of course, yeah, it was pretty brutal. We started off on an opening circuit in a town called Ooster, and that was fine. It was quite flat, but just a lot of road furniture. So between all of the roundabouts and the road furniture and the rain, like, it was just kind of like chaos a bit. But I like really liked that environment in a race because you just kind of need to just get on with it. So being from Ireland, we're fairly used to the rain. It very much changed the dynamic of the races. Like, even watching the juniors and the under 23 men, the race was kind of really decided on the descents, because on the course it was quite technical on some parts, and I think gaps and stuff opened up really quickly. Obviously the hills influenced the race too, but with the weather it was just kind of everyone was a bit more on edge with the rain, but that was fine. And then we did that lap, and then around 27K in, we went up a hill that connected to the circuit. So yeah, it was, I think, about like a 4K climb, and it was quite steep at the beginning. So that was the race kind of really got going there. And then we got onto the circuit, and then, yeah, it was kind of a relentless circuit. Like, you went through the city or the finish line, and then you went up like a wall, like I keep calling it, because it was like, I don't know, 18-20% at one point. Then you descend a bit, and then you're on like another 3 or 4K climb. So the course was really, really relentless. A great course for Worlds, but it was hard. The crowd was amazing. I've never actually really experienced anything like it, especially on that really the wall. Like, oh, it was something else. I was by myself at one point, but when I was going up, you would have thought you're like at the front of the race, because the enthusiasm, everyone was class. Yeah, you really got so much more out of yourself when you've got like all these people like cheering for you like crazy. But yeah, it was something I never experienced before, which I think really added to the whole like Worlds. I like couldn't have predicted the year that I've had. Like, yeah, I've kind of, this has been my first year of like properly, I suppose, racing at UCI level. Last year I only raced half of the season with a Belgian club team, so I got a little flavor of UCI races, but nothing compared to this year. I said to myself at the start of the year that I just want to like take this opportunity and race as many races as possible, and yeah, just throw myself into whatever opportunities I get. And with the team this year, it's been like unbelievable. Like, yeah, getting all the UCI races, but then the World Tour races has been like getting to do Ride London and Tour Britain was like, oh, it was just class. Like getting to experience racing at World Tour level is, it's just like a different feeling, like than say racing in point ones and stuff. And I think getting to be exposed to that level, it really helped, I think, my development this year. Like I just gained so much from it. The racing scene in Ireland at the minute, like say if you compare it to a couple of years ago, like it has improved a lot. Like we've got a really good National Road Series. There's a load of clubs that put so much work in to keep the races going on the weekend and stuff. Year on year, it's improving. It's just to, yeah, keep, I think, focus really like on the grassroots and keeping, I think, like girls, especially in the sport. Because I know when I was like a youth and junior, there was a load of girls racing. And then unfortunately, a lot of them kind of stopped because of just like going to college and life and stuff like that happening. So I think it is like the pathway for it is like, is improving. It's just, I think, need to keep working on it.
So wonderful there to hear, Phil, from Quiver O'Brien. I mean, it was a very strange championships away following this tragic loss of Muriel Furrer. Let's try and focus on the positives. And I guess the biggest from a Team GB perspective is this incredible success of Kat Ferguson, the last rider that I can really bring to mind who won the junior double, the junior road race and the junior time trial was a certain Remco Evenepoel, which I guess makes Kat Ferguson the new Remco. Would that be fair?
Well, she's an absolutely incredible talent, 18 years old. And if you look at kind of how she has evolved, she's one of those riders that's cross-discipline again. Road, cyclocross, track. She grew up on mountain bikes. I think it's her versatility. She's a really versatile rider. You could almost compare her to some degree to where Tom Pidcock came from, only from a perspective of having those bike handling skills that when you've done all of those multidiscipline events in your life, it tends to lead you to be a very capable rider as well. So absolutely all credit to her, 18 years old, to be achieving what she's achieving is truly magnificent.
Absolutely amazing. I mean, she's won pro races. She's still a stagiaire with Movistar team, but she's got two pro wins from three starts, which shows that, you know, this is not a rider who is the best of her age group. She is a serious talent by any standard. While we're dealing with youthful talent, one of the sort of less enjoyable aspects, I guess, of the World Championships was the post-time trial interview with Great Britain's Josh Tarling. Now, to put it in perspective, Josh had finished fourth in the elite men's time trial. The only people that beat him were the defending champion Remco Evenepoel, double world champion Filippo Ganna, and the newly crowned European champion Eduardo Affini. So a brilliant ride by any standard for a 20-year-old to finish fourth against such illustrious opposition. And yet, he looked anything but happy. He looked in a pretty bad way. This is the third time on the bounce that we've seen this. He was understandably distraught at the Olympic Games, where he was fourth despite having had a puncture. He had a subpar performance at the Vuelta. Again, we should stress how good his subpar performances are. He was sixth there in the opening stage time trial. And now we're seeing him in a really distressed state at having finished fourth in elite world championships. How do you read that, Phil? Is it time that he took a break? Is it time for the people around him to sort of pay attention and help to take the pressure off? This is a young man with big pressure on his shoulders.
I mean, absolutely. I saw that interview, and you really do feel for these riders because the pressure to perform, but some of which it is self-induced, Tim. We have to acknowledge that if you've done anything around performance sport, you'll understand things like the pressure curve, which means, you know, too much pressure leads to underperformance and too little leads to underperformance. And it's about finding that pressure sweet spot to get the optimum performance out of any athlete, whatever they do. Finding that flow moment where they just simply perform at the very highest level of their capability to process. So you can only imagine that when that doesn't happen, your ability to be resilient in that moment is something that you have to keep developing. And I think there's two things I want to sort of add to this, which is there's an author called Brad Stolberg that I really rate. I've read a lot of his books, and he said something, a little one-liner, which is that happiness is equal to your expectations minus your reality. And I guess so, therefore, if that's the case, it's about what expectations you set. And therefore, when your reality is not meeting those expectations, it begins to establish the gap between those two things. So it could well be that Josh was just absolutely just focused on winning rather than delivering the best performance, if that makes sense. And again, coaches will tell you there's a difference between those two things. And sports performance psychologists will tell you that actually you're more favoured to delivering your best performance, focusing on your process rather than winning outright, if that makes sense. So maybe he just needs some people around him. The second point that I wanted to make was, I think that we've seen now in the past 5 years in professional cycling, the timeline for a younger person to make it to the very top has really been shortened. And we've discussed this on many of the podcasts before, which is that you used to go through this sort of stepped process, didn't we? We've talked about this so much that ultimately it might take years for you to get to World Tour team. So you'd have to go through that process of lots of defeats, learning from mistakes and all these sorts of things. But now what we're seeing is the professional riders becoming younger and younger and younger. And that could well be a link between their individual resiliency at that particular point and their age in terms of maturity. So whilst I haven't seen any scientific correlation between those things right now, it does make me wonder, is there something there within that? But obviously, nobody, no fan ever wants to see riders psychologically suffering. No one wants to see that. So I really, really do hope that whoever those riders are, whether it be, Anna Henderson, who talked after her race about, keeping perspective, having to be kind to yourself, because nowadays, if you don't fulfill perhaps the expectations of the fan base, it's very easy to then have lots of inbound negative messaging coming towards you. And so that ability to be self-kind is something that actually generally maturity tends to bring to you much, much more. So I think the ability to wrap more professional support around some of these younger riders, I think, is a very, very key thing for the future of the sport.
Let's move on now to talk about the National Road Series, another success for our Das Hutchinson Brother UK squad, who were crowned National Road Series champions in Northumberland. Robin Clay's victory at the Curlew Cup increased the team's lead at the top of the standings from 90 to 107 points. The Alba Development Team, another UCI squad, finished second, and their leader Isla Shaw was crowned individual champion. Shipton Apex, Kat Ferguson's team, was third. Esther Wong finished third in the Curlew Cup, and she was third in the series. And our own Brother UK on form team, well, they were sixth overall out of 17 teams. A very impressive campaign, again, from Mark Botley's squad. Grace Reynolds, she was 11th on the day and 11th in the series. The Men's National Road Series concluded at the same event. The Beaumont Trophy was won by Oliver Rees of Sabgal Anycolour. William Truelove of Thriver's Secret was second, and Thomas Armstrong of Wheelbase Cabtech Castelli was third. George Kimber of Spirit TBW Stuart Hall Cycling was crowned champion of the Men's National Road Series. St Piran's James Mackay was second overall, while Ollie Rees, again of Sabgal Anycolour, was third. St Piran successfully defended their National Road Series team title with an impressive 513 points. Wheelbase Cabtech Castelli finished as runners-up with 435 points, while Spirit TBW Stuart Hall Cycling finished their championship challenge in third place with 274 points. Ian Watson, one of three co-managers of Das Hutchinson Brother UK, I caught up with him, Phil, and he told me it's not over until it's over.
Oh, it feels fantastic. We went into it with a fairly commanding lead, but we can never take anything for granted, and we didn't. You don't know you've got it until everybody's crossed the line. And yeah, once they did that yesterday, it was a nice feeling, because this team prize has been particularly good, I think, because like we've won three of the five rounds of the national series, but they've always been different riders, so it's not like we just had one dominating rider. It's been shared around, and we've had a couple of podiums with other riders. And what that means is that we didn't finish as high up in the individual standards as we'd like, but then we did have a convincing win in the team. And I think that reflects how the team performed this year. how they performed for each other, how they supported each other, how they sacrificed sometimes their own ride for other people. And when they did that, the other person then did finish the job off as well, you know. So there's been a real strong bond within the team this year, and they've, which has massively contributed to our success. So I think, yeah, once it was all over yesterday and across the line, I think it was really satisfying they got that for the riders more than anything else, because they deserved it and they worked hard for it. For me, I think Lancaster is probably the race that sticks in my mind, because that's when we turned it around, you know. Rydell was fantastic the way he rode in that, and then yesterday was great as well. But I remember I pitched the idea in Lancaster of let's go from the gun and just attack it all day long, and that got met with a lot of blank stares. I had to remind them that we'd just been doing all these races abroad that were faster than the National Series are run, and the longer than the National Series are run, so you really can do this. And after a little bit of thought, they said yeah, and that's what they did, you know, and that resulted in coming first, third and fourth, I think, didn't we, in that, and that's when it all turned around, you know, and we've won every round since. And again, that's not a boast, that's to say that, you know, it took that first half of the year to get the team together. So rather than just having one outstanding rider who can win it, they've all learned how to ride together and work together, which meant that one round was won by Frankie, one round was won by Lucy, and another round was won by Robin. And then everybody else is in there. You know, we've got other people who are capable of winning those as well. So it's been a work in progress, and it's all down to the riders and how they've gone into the races and the mindset and those sorts of things. But yeah, I think out of all of them, I think Lancaster sticks in my mind, because that's when it all turned around. And since then, both home and abroad, we've not looked back since that race. That's the season over for us now. There are things that carry on, but I think from where we were with the putting the two teams together and the big program that we've ended up having because of it, which was the whole idea. Yeah, I think everyone's tired now, you know, which is understandable, both riders and staff. So we're going to say this is the end of the season now after Curlew. And yeah, the riders will have a little bit of a break. There is some track racing coming up. Quite a few of the team are in the London Free Day, and there's some other bits and bobs track wise, but road is finished. But it's nice for the riders. The riders all get a nice break and a nice few weeks off before they start the winter training. But to be fair, for the management side of the team, this is by far our busiest year, and I won't have any rest until the Christmas break probably, because it's it's mental, because now we're dealing with like new riders, contracts, sponsorship, putting it all together, race calendars for next year. It's a really, really, really busy time, and it's non-stop.
So that was Ian Watson-Phil, one of three managers of our Das Hutchinson Brother UK squad, along with Simon Howes and Andrew Payne. And, well, they've got a lot to be proud of, I think. Is this the best sponsored team that we've had, do you think? They were the National Circuit Series champions, National Road Series champions. They won the RAS. They were third overall in the Volta a Portugal Feminina. Everything would point to them, I think, sort of topping our unofficial scorecard of sponsored teams, until you consider their squad in 2019, when it was then called Brother UK Tifosi Powerby on form, where they won the National Road Series and the Tour Series. Bex Durrell was the individual winner that year, and she won the British Circuit Race title to boot. Anna Henderson was in the same squad that year. Coincidentally, in 2019, the Brother UK Fusion RT team won the British Women's Team Cup and the Ras Naman with Claire Steeles, who now rides for Movie Star team. So what do you reckon, Phil? Where does this Das Hutchinson Brother UK team fit in the all-time rankings of brother-sponsored squads?
Oh, again, another really difficult question to give a straight answer to, I think, Tim. Again, the reason is because of context. Each team had different budgets at the time, and we have to remember that the Das Hutchinson Brother UK team is formed from a merger of two teams. So they were able to bring the strongest riders into one team effectively. And back in the day, of course, Brother UK Tifosi Parental Unform was a, you know, fabulous team of its time. And likewise, when Claire Steeles rode for what was the Brother UK Fusion RT team managed by Terry, you know, that also was a strong squad, but they were competing against each other. So I think all we conclude at the moment, Tim, is that we seem to have got some reasonable form in picking teams that tend to have amazing riders on them that go on to really fantastic things. And without a doubt, you're seeing, I think, in the current squad of Das Hutchinson Brother UK is some really strong individual riders. And I spoke to Ian on the phone a couple of weeks ago, actually. And, you know, I was just asking him just his reflections on the season and all of those sorts of things. And, you know, what he did say was, is it takes a little time for a team to gel. And I know this from my, you know, my day job, when you do reorganizations and things like that, you know, teams just don't come together on day one and work perfectly. They have to work out how to work and function as a team. And that can take some time. So it's very, very interesting that I think we saw a very, very different team in the second half of the season than perhaps we did in the first. And that was because that time had begun to elapse them to everybody to work out how to communicate with each other, what each other's styles were, how the culture can then begun to bond, how the team became to strengthen. And now, without a doubt, when you look at their results, I think you can genuinely say, you know, based upon results alone, absolutely, they're one of the most successful teams we've ever been behind.
Yeah, very much so. I don't know if Ian gave you any steer on whether any of his riders might be moving on up for next season. I mean, so much success. Frankie Hall, I know, has placed everything on this season up to and including suspending her PhD study. She's 29 now. Lucy's 26. She's had victories all over the place in the RAS and the National Road Series. She's performed strongly overseas. There's a younger cohort, Quiver, we heard from earlier. Robin Clay, who won the last round of Curlew Cup. She's only 20. Morven Yeoman had a very strong start to this season. She's 20 as well, I should say. Did Ian give you any hints, any steers? Could we have another graduate going up to the Women's World Tour?
Well, sorry to say, he didn't cover that with me, and I wouldn't expect him to. The managers have to play their cards, you know, close to their chest at this particular point. That's totally understandable. However, you can see that there, you know, we've always seen this, haven't we, where the difficulty of the British racing is that many people have to have a full-time career or a part-time career or be a student funded through a student loan or something in order to try and pursue the passion that they love. But they all get to this point where they're going to have to make a decision about whether to try and make it. And I think we've seen here, as you mentioned there with, you know, Frankie, Lucy and Robin, they're all at that point where they're really just trying to fully commit to say, right, this is it. I've got to really give it everything this season with a view to seeing whether that pathway can open up to a World Tour team. So let's hope it does for one or all of them.
We saw Das Hutchinson Brother UK really at full throttle at the RAS Naman. This is Ireland's leading stage race for women. It was absolutely dominated by our squad. Mia Griffin won the general classification. She won the points classification. She won the best Irish rider classification. She won stages 1 and 3. She could not have achieved any more. Quiver O'Brien, who we spoke to earlier, she won the best young rider classification, having won stage 2. Das Hutchinson Brother UK took home the team prize, having won 4 stages of the 6 and with 3 different riders, with Mia, with Quiver and Lucy Lee, who took the final stage. Let's have a listen now to Mia.
There couldn't really be a more local race for me. And just to win in Kilkenny was insane. There were so many people I knew around, so it was so nice in that sense that I got to really share it with all my family as well, because it's not often that you get my 2 grandparents that they can't really travel all over the world. So the fact that they get to see me race in a few days and then like share the high of winning was actually so nice. I think Ronan, who runs the race, really wanted to have an Irish winner as well. And I think it's been 11 years since Olivia Dillon won the Ross, so it was a long time before they had an Irish winner. So I think they were all so delighted as well. It was so nice. Like, some of them were nearly in tears as well, which was so, so nice. Coming into the race, I didn't have an expectation to go for the GC, because I, coming from the track, was really quite punchy, but I didn't know how my endurance was gonna fall. So it was a bit like, ooh, I've not like trained for stage racing, so there might be a point where the doors blow off and that's it. But then 3 days in, I was like, better keep this jersey now, because before that I hadn't actually thought of it. I was like, okay, I'll go in, I'll race hard, I'll go for stages and see how that happens, because my coach as well, Tommy, is a very chill guy, and he kind of just wanted to go in just being like, okay, just go for the stages and then just chill on the days where there's hills, just like get dropped and that's fine. And I think he almost does a little bit of reverse psychology in that sense of like, it's okay for this to happen, but if you outdo yourself, then good as well. The photo that Lorraine O'Sullivan took, the one of me with my granny and my nanny, then I think that photo, everyone really loved that photo because obviously it's so nice and so rare to get a photo of a sports person with their two grandparents. And I think that kind of resonates with people as well, and draws more people into a sport maybe that would go a little bit under the radar in Ireland. It's a small little community in Ireland as well, I would say. But yeah, we have some really, really good talent coming up, like shockingly good. But I think the scene is so small that it's almost like you have to, it's different to the UK where you have a bunch of like 90 girls turning up for national series races. Maybe in Ireland you might have 30 or 40 turning up for national series races. So it's like a completely other world, really, per se. And I think that in Ireland, then if you're just doing national series races, you don't learn how to be in a bunch or anything. So I think that the girls are forced to have to go abroad to learn how to race, to be able to race in Europe and everything. So we definitely are a little bit behind where the UK is. And actually, that was my first national series race in the UK. And I was actually blown away by the fact that you have like a full bunch, and even the standard of the physical abilities of the girls was really impressive, because it wasn't like just 10 girls that was strong. It was a group of like 30 that were really strong. So I found that like very impressive as well.
So there was Mia Griffin-Phil of Das Hutchinson Brother UK, who had spent most of the year training in a velodrome on Mallorca for the Olympic Games in Paris, and who returned to the road in emphatic style. A home winner, of course. The race was in Kilkenny. Mia is from Kilkenny. That's got to be good box office, isn't it, for the race organisers?
Oh, absolutely amazing. That's the fairy tale story, isn't it, coming to life. Just brilliant. You know, Kilkenny girl wins the Raz. I mean, just brilliant. But you can see she was dominant, absolutely dominant, to sort of be winning two stages as well as the points just in the GC. I mean, just fabulous. And it's also known as a hard race. Raz is no easy race whatsoever. You know, the parkours, the profile, often the weather's normally kind of a deciding factor too. It really, I guess, shines a spotlight on Mia to say, you've got to be a very capable rider to win that race. But to win it on your home turf, your home race on your home turf, Kilkenny girl does it. Just wonderful.
Yeah, that writes its own headline, doesn't it? That's wonderful news. I bet the organisers were delighted, as she said. I mean, it obviously gave a huge boost in confidence to Das Hutchinson Brother UK, who in their very next race out sealed overall victory in the National Road Series. I guess there's something in this success breeding success, isn't there? I mean, Robin went and won the Curlew Cup. Lucy, who'd won the final stage at the Raz, finished fourth in the UCI 1.2 Pioneira race in Valencia next time out. Momentum is everything, I guess.
It is. And, you know, we talked earlier about sports psychology and performance and things like that. And success is a very, very important factor when it comes to a team's confidence, regardless of your sport. And if you are a winning team, it can bring that extra sense of that extra 1% or 2% that sometimes a team needs when they're rolling up to a line as winners of previous races, because that breeds that confidence. And confidence can really take you somewhere when you need to dig in. So I think it's absolutely brilliant. And yeah, success really does, that old saying, success breeds success.
Yeah, that's certainly the case for Das Hutchinson Brother UK. It was interesting to hear Mia talk about the disparity at the moment between the Irish women's road scene and the British women's road scene. We heard earlier in the season, didn't we, from Paul Smith at Brother UK on Form, Mia and Stella's father, who was the assistant manager of that team, and was saying this is why he brings his daughters across to the UK, because the Irish scene unfortunately just isn't on the same level at the moment, but he's confident it will improve. Quiver made a very similar comment when I discussed her performance at the World Championships. I mean, we almost take for granted, don't we, that the thriving success of the women's road scene. We know that there are problems with the men's road scene in the UK. We'll come on to discuss those later. But could the British scene inspire the Irish, do you think?
Well, I'm sure, you know, there's many riders in Ireland that are, you know, wanting to race in Ireland, have their own scene. But of course, we're back to these practicalities, aren't we, of how the federation works, of sponsorship, the economic environment, managers starting up teams, trying to raise sponsorship, all of these sorts of things. So whether or not we're going to see a revolution in cycling in Ireland, probably not, in the same way that we're saying we're not seeing a revolution in British cycling. What we've got is a very good base, which has dwindled in some respects, but at least the base has been there and it's now in sort of back to evolution again. Whereas I think in Ireland, they don't quite have the same amount of resources, whether that be races, teams with decent budgets, etc. So I can understand, you know, why a rider would want to come over to the UK scene as a pathway to trying to perhaps develop a professional career.
Let's move on now to talk about the Tour of Britain Men. My goodness, what an addition. I mean, for a race that was facing extinction only, well, this time last year, what a way to bounce back. It was won overall by Stevie Williams of Israel Premier Tech, the Welsh rider. He won two stages and the overall. It was a brilliant race, an exhilarating race. Even the flat stages were lit up with constant attacks. My favourite take on it, Phil, was from Ben Wiggins, who described it on Instagram as a nat B. And I think that was a compliment. I think that's how he intended that comment to be received. It was just brilliant racing every single day. And, you know, the superstar, the headline acts, Remco Evenepoel and Julian Alaphilippe of Soudal Quickstep, they were the instigators. They were at the heart of the action on almost every stage. Tom Pidcock of Ineos Grenadiers, he joined the party on the final stage, but unfortunately crashed out in an incident involving the red jersey Paul Magnier, the points leader, another Soudal Quickstep rider. He'd already won three stages, but both sadly had to abandon. But, you know, it was everything that we had hoped to see from this resurrected Tour of Britain. Big crowds, strong performances from all the young British riders. It was a race that Britain's latest golden generation stamped themselves all over. Let's hear from one of them now. That's Louis Sutton. He's a Rainer rider. He rode out in the colours of Team GB and won a combativity award. Let's hear now from Louis.
Tour of Britain was a last-minute call-up for me. On the Sunday night of Tour L'Avenir, I messaged Matt Bramier, the DS and head of all of our GB performance, saying, "Oh, I don't have many races left of this year. Do you have any reserve spots for Tour of Britain?" And he was like, "Okay, I'll put you in first reserve." And then someone got ill or something. And yeah, last like 2 days before the race, I was in France and I got the call up and I was buzzing. Yeah, so I just jumped to that opportunity straight away. It was my first ever pro race. Not many people watch any amateur racing, even under 23 UCIs. So just being able to race against the likes of Remco, Alaphilippe, Stevie Williams was, yeah, it's a massive opportunity and you've got to take it by the grasp, really, because that might be your only opportunity. But yeah, I guess with GB that has helped a lot. And if I was in a British team, it would be even more big, because at least, yeah, it's one of the only races where you would get lights, well, people looking at you through the camera. It was constant every day. Like, I remember the third stage, Alaphilippe goes in an attack on the first climb and he's away with 1 minute with another Ineos rider for like the first 30Ks. And that's normally unheard of, like one of the best riders in the race to go in an early breakaway. Just, yeah, made it really exciting, which I love, really. It makes it a lot less boring, to be honest, and predictable. Yeah, I always planned that day to get in the early breakaway. I'd planned to try my best the first 20 minutes, but it must have been Probably one of the hardest parts of the race, really, for me to make sure I got in the break where I had to follow every move. But yeah, once I got in that, it was okay. And just like try and rest as much as possible before I knew eventually that Remco and everyone else would come towards. And then, yeah, from there, it was just survive, to be honest, and just hang on. I would say the conditions played a part in it. With the stage three, the weather was a bit rainy, so that, I don't know, I guess it just caused people to just want to go early and get warm as such. Or the fact that stage two was just, yeah, there was wind as well and the narrow roads. Then I guess the Tour of Britain's always got narrow roads, but the short climbs and everything, yeah. And I guess the fact that really these best riders are using it to prepare for world championships, so they want to make a harder race. So you see Remco and Alaphilippe attacking 10Ks in. Yeah, they want to make it as hard as possible. Yeah, I would say just don't be scared of going early and attacking and using. Go over the big teams, the World Tour teams. Don't just let them predict and control the race. You get involved as well and not just be a puppet, to be honest, yeah. Yeah, long-term goal is obviously stepping up to the professional peloton and, yeah, doing races like Tour of Britain most weekends. So, yeah, nothing is set to stone yet. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. Hopefully after World Championships, I'll be able to say I'm in a professional team.
So there we go. That was Lewis Suttonfill of Team GB. What a race. He had everything from combativity awards to concussion, an experience he'll never forget. Is this a new golden generation? Am I getting carried away here? I mean, Oscar Ronley won the white jersey and finished second overall. Callum Thornley of Trinity won the KOM competition. Joe Blackmore, who in his previous race had become the first British rider to win the Tour de l'Avenir, he was all over it. I mean, it's hard to keep up, isn't it? These young British riders just keep coming.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's terrific. It's terrific to see not only the big names, you know, people like Alaphilippe up the road or Remco up the road. I mean, that's what we as the fans want to see, is these huge names racing on British roads. It's wonderful, but also lighting it up. You know, Alaphilippe trying to ride off, you know, on various occasions. You just love it. You just know what's coming. But equally, you just saw these, you know, names emerging, people whose names were unfamiliar, getting up there, getting in the breaks. Absolutely brilliant. So as usual, you know, credit to foundations like the Rainer Foundation, helping to bring these riders through. Trinity, still offering that bridge over onto the World Tour. The Tour of Britain and the Women's Tour, you know, they are probably the most important shop window for some of these British riders to be seen in, you know, a race of this standing, in a stage race. So it's important that they show what they can do. I thought it was also great to see Matt Holmes in GB kit. That was great. So that was another wonderful thing. So yeah, I think all looks good in terms of the talent pipeline that the UK is still pulling together.
Yeah. And what about the long-term future of the race? Did we see enough on this six-stage edition to guarantee its future? Goodness knows, it was exciting. Do you think the World Tour teams might be looking for a longer race again next year? Of course, traditionally it was eight stages. Or do you think it's proved its viability? This year there were big crowds, there were lots of media interest and brilliant racing every day.
Yeah, for sure. Whether it's six stages or eight stages, I know that BC will be very, very keen to keep the Tour of Britain, both versions, in the portfolio and in the UCI's calendar. We've talked before that once you drop out that calendar, it's very, very difficult to get back in again. So I'm sure, given the very, very short timescales British Cycling had to pull all this together after all of the things that went on with Sweet Spot, that they'll be very satisfied with what actually got delivered. And I think we as fans also just have to be satisfied for now. I think we talked about that a few episodes ago, that BC will do their best to get the best race they possibly can on, given time, resources, sponsorship, and all of those things. And I think they did. And this, obviously, we're going to talk about some of the task force stuff in a moment, Tim. But one of the things we did say was it was critically important to keep these very high profile races in the international calendar. Otherwise, it would be very, very easy for, you know, the UK to be almost jettisoned off of the entire European domestic racing calendar, which would have been a disaster, I think, for all concerned.
Well, that gives us a very nice springboard into the main business of the day, which is a progress report from British Cycling on its implementation of recommendations from the Elite Road Racing Task Force. And a quick recap for listeners who haven't yet heard about the task force. I can't believe there's anybody out there, any of our listeners at least, who haven't. This was a panel of experts convened last year by British Cycling CEO John Dutton to generate ideas to revitalise top-level domestic racing, both road and circuit. An independent panel of experts, including riders, managers, commercial and marketing experts, including, of course, Phil Jones. In January, British Cycling published 16 broad recommendations from 42 detailed recommendations made by the task force. And in this progress report, British Cycling highlights successes in accordance with those recommendations, notably the delivery of the Tours of Britain for men and women, a huge achievement. But in certain areas, there doesn't seem to be the alignment that we might want to see between the recommendations of the task force and BC's progress report, notably a recommendation that the National Road Series and National Circuit Series should be allowed to target its own sponsors instead. They seem to have been wrapped into the Lloyd's deal. Phil, broad general response, are you disappointed or are you encouraged by what we've heard from British Cycling in this progress report?
Oh, that's a big question. So obviously we spent a lot of time trying to generate this report. And what we always have to remember is this is an advisory piece of work. It's not mandatory to implement it all. You might implement none of it. You might ignore the report in its entirety. But I know that John, with the right intention, wanted us to do this work to try and steer him as, you know, the new CEO about what, you know, what the direction should be moving forward. And I think BC have always probably done the right thing in terms of trying to set expectations, and probably the task force did too, that not everything can be done quickly. This is going to take some years to establish some of the outcomes that we recommended would probably revitalize the scene. And of course, what one of those was is actually cutting up the portfolio. In fact, in all of British Cycling, actually, that was the real recommendation, was actually don't allow one sponsor to do everything, because it might be better that you separate everything, BMX, cyclocross, mountain bike, road, track, into various disciplines where you might get more interest from more specific sector sponsors wanting to achieve more specific sector aims for the genre of the sport. So that was our recommendation. Now, of course, back to my earlier point, even though we recommended it, it doesn't mean they're going to have to do it. And obviously, we saw the announcement that Lloyd's had come along, and clearly, British Cycling have a board of directors there whose job it is to look at the bigger picture, and that will include the wider commercials for British Cycling as a whole, not just road cycling. And clearly, they've made the decision to adopt that major commercial sponsorship. So having done that now, of course, that makes that recommendation redundant, unless within that contract that they negotiated with Lloyd's, there is a capacity for perhaps other sponsors to be involved, because that was the issue we were trying to address, was that previous large sponsors had had all-encompassing clauses, which sort of shut out all competition from the sector that they were in, which then made it more difficult for race organisers to raise individual sponsorships from perhaps, say, local competitors when they were trying to organise a race. So whether that's been addressed or not, I don't know. My generalised response or feeling might be, I would imagine the new sponsor, because if it was me, I'd be trying to lock out everybody else in the same way. So you've got to look at that one and go, well, BC have decided it and the board have decided it, and that's what happened. So let's put a line through that recommendation. So once you start going through all the other ones, if you begin to start seeing lines going through lots of recommendations, i.e. a decision not to action or inaction, then of course it's for stakeholders in the sport to continue to hold BC to account. And I know, for example, Denny at the British Continental, you know, has recently done, I think, you know, a really great interview with John, where he is pressing John for more accountability as to what's going to be done by when. So in all of our recommendations, you can take them all, and we already did a lot of this work, which is taking each recommendation and putting it into a priority matrix to say sort of what's easy to do, what's difficult to do, what's going to take a while to do, what can be done quickly. So sort of what are the quick wins which are easy to do? We prioritized all of those. So for me, I guess what I'd want to see most is action around what we consider to be the quick wins that the task force recommended. We had, in the meantime, time-dependent things, which was the Tour of Britain and the Women's Tour, which, again, if I was the CEO of BC, you've got to look at things and say, well, these are the immediate and pressing things we've got to get done. So you have to prioritise, though. And then, of course, we had all of the other elements that the Federation also need to be organising around the Olympics, you know, and all those sorts of things was also going on. So I think maybe a good time to see what progress can be made will be over the autumn and winter period, where there's a lot less pressure around the racing season and probably more time for a strategic overseeing and delivery.
Yeah, that's a very fair assessment. I think there is some disappointment around the lack of progress, particularly on the recommendations for the National Road Series, but we cannot underestimate the scale of the wins in saving the two Tours of Britain, in bringing on a blue chip major sponsor, regardless of the precise details of that contract and the effect that it might have. And that's still to be seen on smaller sponsors that National Road Series and National Circuit Series organisers might attract. What would you like them to turn their attention to next, Phil? There's so much detail, particularly in the 42 recommendations that were submitted to British Cycling. There's a lot of good stuff in there that isn't going to grab any headlines, like centralised procurement, for example, but which is going to change the dial. What would you like them to see them turn their attention to next? Which of those quick wins should be next up?
Well, again, if it were me, and I think for everybody that we consulted with in the sport, because remember, we did a major consultation piece with all of the team managers, race organisers, as well as BC members. So we're not lacking information here about what people want to see. And some of the things that they wanted to see were things like address the geography issue. Okay, can we please have some road racing in the south of England? So, of course, for me, that would be like, try and get that done. Are there one, two or three races you might be able to introduce to the calendar? Working with existing organisers, again, to transfer knowledge as much as possible. And I know there's goodwill there that people are prepared to do that. But obviously, you've got to find those organisers. So you need some new organisers. Then you need to just bring the winning pattern, which you can do, to some of those races in the south. And I think that will be really good, because that, I think, will be quite a good signal to the sport that the Federation has listened. The other thing, I think, is obviously we spent a lot of time also looking at the circuit series as being really the sort of the gold ribboned of make that work and you can really make all of cycling, road racing work. And so obviously what we talked about there was really moving to create these sort of city centre spectacles focused around city centres in order that then you could drive the economic agenda for the sport and make it a much more well-packaged sporting spectacle, which can be sort of taken from city to city, which can begin to create its own brand. So we said staying away from smaller venues, but really making sure that it goes to larger venues. So I'd like to see that really begin to have some more focus and perhaps the announcement of one or two more big ticket cities hosting rounds of the circuit series. I think that would be really, really good. But we have to continue to remember that because of all of these issues around local authorities, landing a local authority to say yes is so difficult. It takes so much persuasion and work and influence with all of these stakeholders at a time when we've got now a new government. And of course, with a new agenda, we're going to have a budget fairly soon and we're going to understand the extent of whether local authorities are going to be further funded or subject to further cutbacks. And if local authorities are subject to further cutbacks, because again, we've all heard the mood music, haven't we, in the media, that actually the coffers aren't as full as they even imagined they were going to be walking into. So that's only, it could be laying the foundation for, you know, further hard times. So we have to accept that this journey, this direction of travel is not going to be easy, but I think that we definitely want to see a commitment to progress, to at least report on progress, that things are happening and making some announcements, particularly when we've got, let's say, a new city on board, and linking that back to the task force recommendation. We've got this city because, and we plan to use organisers from X and Y to bring the success model to that city. And if you can make it work, you sell to other cities using the same model. So, you know, I think that's all we want to see really, is perhaps a little bit more visible progress.
Yeah, a very fair assessment. As fans, of course, we want it all immediately, don't we? We want it all overnight. And perhaps that's a fair aspiration, given the dire state, unfortunately, that the National Road Series particularly still finds itself in. I don't think we can doubt John's sincerity and his success. Let's face it, in the time that he's been in post, the Federation really has gained a fresh impetus, and nothing embodies that more than the salvation of the two Tours of Britain. The Lloyd sponsorship, of course, is critically important from a financial sense. Let's hope that these task force recommendations do not have lines drawn through them, that there is a genuine sense of purpose into implementing as many of them as they feel is within their gift to do so. There's good people working on that. There's Mark Etches, there's Heather Bamforth, admittedly in a voluntary capacity in Mark and Heather's case, but people who have the interests of the scene at heart. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. We've got through a fair bit, and we've got the Rainer Foundation dinner coming up soon. That's on Saturday, November the 23rd. So anybody out there listening who wants to support the next generation of British superstars and who indeed wants to rub shoulders with them at the Leeds Armouries, then get your tickets now. Phil, thank you very much again for joining me, and thank you to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.